substantially larger than annual givers, that means less pledge drive, more efficiency, and greater stability for KPFT, regardless of the time of year. Again, just call our development director at 713-526-4000 to inquire about our sustainer program. Make a difference today. This is KPFT Houston.
You're listening to Rat-a-tat. Well, you were listening, but now you're listening to me. And you're also listening to 90.1 FM, KPFT Houston.
Listeners should be aware that the following program contains language and audio images which may be found disturbing and may not be suitable for your snotty-nosed little brat who probably cusses like a sailor behind your back anyway. Parental discretion is advised.
Program.
Welcome to Technology Bites. I'm Jay Lee, the perfect.
He hasn't called in.
Oh, okay.
I'm Flicted.
I'm Barrett.
I'm Lee, and I guess that's it.
That's it.
Yeah, last time I saw Petey, went to that 80s arcade in search of, I don't know what he was looking for.
Said something about a laser and a reindeer flotilla.
I hope he's okay.
That's kind of a deep cut there.
It is a deep cut. So deep, I can't follow it.
Reindeer flotilla. That was Flynn's
Tron.
Password.
I was talking about Tron.
Oh.
Or not Flynn. It was
he got
was
scanned
Alan's.
Into the computer.
Yeah, I remember that part.
Maybe it was either Alan's password or Flynn's password.
Okay.
Surely they've changed it by now. But
no, not it. Not
password rotation policies
IT,
did not exist back then.
IT at NCOM is pretty fast and loose.
All right. Well, we're glad you could tune in to Technology Bites. We're missing Pete for right now, but we're working on that. As we all, every week we're working on that.
We are.
And Groovehouse is off doing something Groovehousey.
And he's grooving.
Yeah, so we do want to let you know, I was not paying attention to the calendar, but next week is a fundraiser, so you have that to look forward to. We're excited for you. I don't know what that is. So is there, drop that
call.
Yeah,
I was saying, there's somebody's hanging out there.
All right, so so next week is fundraiser. And also next week, Barrett and Flicted are leaving early to stake out a position Yay. At DEF CON.
I mean, oh, I'm so sorry we're going to miss Fundraiser.
Going to miss the fundraiser.
We actually didn't know. We didn't know. I think the truth
it
is
it wouldn't have mattered.
Lee was hoping to go.
It wouldn't have mattered.
It wouldn't have mattered.
Right? You know, it's like, okay, well, I've already got plans regardless.
We've got airfare.
It's not like you can go to the other DEF CON.
Yeah.
Of course, it is going to be canceled.
What is the other DEF
CON? Actually, I heard it was canceled.
It is canceled.
Yeah. Really, I mean, there are a number of regional cons that kind of go on, but I'd say the only answer to DEF CON would be Australia has Rocks CON, which is kind of that size. And if you really want to go big, every 4 years, the CCC happens, and that's the Chaos. Is it 2 years?
Chaos Computer Club?
That's 4 years. I don't know. There's a 4 years is the camp, the Congress. Black
like the Olympics?
2 years.
Black Hat's the one I'm thinking of.
Black Hat's just
well, Black
right,
Hat's
before DEF CON.
Right before DEF CON.
It's the corporate sellout version of DEF CON. Oh. It's
that costs a lot
but
to get into.
There's a picture of a guy wearing a Guy Fawkes mask at... Oh, no, and he's got a DEF CON shirt on. Yeah. Mind.
There is
Never
some,
mind.
There is some crossover there.
There's a lot of crossover.
There's a lot more deodorant at Black Hat.
Is there some crossover?
Well, once you're at Black Hat... DEF CON's immediately after it. So
you might as well stick around.
Just stick around.
Black Hat ends like, what,
Thursday,
Monday night?
Wednesday.
Thursday?
Yeah, there's, I guess, officially Wednesday night of ending Black Hat parties. And the two started off, Jeff Moss sold one for, I assume, what would be a bunch of money. So that's gone all corporate. And to get into that, it's expensive. It's like four figures
Lame.
Just to attend.
Lame.
But there is a free one called B-Sides. So it's kind of like play on word, like besides, you know, like this besides. And it's also, you know, the flip side, like back if you can remember like 45s and records and vinyl. Or if you're a current hipster, you know what I'm talking
right,
about.
Right, you know all about that.
Yeah, so it's free, though, Talk and that's what's really cool. So it's completely free. In fact, if you stay at the cheap rooms at the Con Hotel, they actually give you two badges. And otherwise, you can register. That way, you're guaranteed badges, and then you can register and
so
get two
badges.
So
are you going to Black Hat?
No, I'm going to B-Sides because I do not have I'm not
four
I don't have four figures just to throw
not
out of my
pocket.
Not after
that jaunt you took to Europe.
No, we're gonna have to be good at the tables to
make
that up.
Can't you trick your job Maybe. Into paying for that? Isn't that that's
no?
Like,
no,
that's
the thing. There's we do. There's too much non-work stuff going on at DEF CON for. work to have, because then I'd feel obligated, like, okay, we should maybe do something work-related. But And we do. We hack on stuff and what have you, but no ties.
No ties.
No ties to the
real
world.
So before the show, we talked very, very briefly as the intro music was finishing about some of the Android vulnerabilities that came up. But before we talk about that, one of the big things that's going to be, that they're going to get into at DEF CON, one of the big vulnerability discussions is with there's a company called Tracking Point that makes Linux powered long range rifles, and I've reported on them before for ours. I've shot their products. They're big, gigantic bolt action rifles, and their ARs, and they have basically this this Linux powered scope on them that enables them to be extremely accurate. My photographer, who had never fired a bolt-action rifle before, was able to ping a target dead-on at 1,000 yards out on his very first shot with these rifles. And apparently, at DEF CON, one of the highlight talks is going to be by Runa... I knew her last name before coming into the show. A security
Matava.
Researcher... No, it's not. Thanks, Pete.
There will be no shooting of lions at DEF CON.
So anyway, there is a she's
no
found
pieces
a
allowed.
Because the rifles are Wi-Fi connected, has found a way into them and has been able to has demonstrated for Wired being able to modify the hit point on the rifles and shift them arbitrarily left and right and basically hack the rifles. That's going to be interesting. If you can make it into that talk, I highly recommend going to see it because that's going to be neat.
There are a ton of talks that happen, you know, throughout the week, both at B-Sides and at DEF CON, but it seems like, you know, take your favorite three and they all happen at the exact same time. So there's going to be a lot of scheduling issues, but I'm going to try and do that. And
do
the
that
nice
one.
Thing is, too, people that can't make it, every year they generally publish, you know, full videos onto YouTube of the talks, and it's complete with, you know, the speakers. You've got
and
audio,
in the Rio,
you've got the slides.
They had closed circuit television.
Hopefully
so you
they
could
will
watch it from your
too.
Room. I don't
Bed
know if
con.
They will this
AKA
time.
Bed
Bed
con.
Con.
Yeah.
That's
yeah,
neat.
They did. They broadcast. But unfortunately, they weren't set up to always
Sometimes
get the slideshows.
Sometimes it
slide
didn't work
shows.
Real well.
That's so,
yeah.
That's so anti-Vegas. Usually they want you out of your room so you can go and...
They want you ordering room
things.
Service and
I don't
drinks.
Know that I don't know how much gambling they actually get out of the hackers.
Well,
the hackers
true.
Are probably, they don't want them gambling. The hackers are probably counting cards.
They're like the Rain Men. They can just count the cards without the equipment.
Yeah.
No kidding. I was in Vegas last week, 2 weeks ago, I think it was, and I won $60 in a slot machine, and that's like the luckiest I've ever been, and I can never play anything ever again because I won. So I wanted to ask just real quick about the Android vulnerability, the set of Android vulnerabilities that have come up right as you're going into DEF CON, and you have an Android
timing.
Phone on you, right?
Yeah, and that's probably not going to get powered up all that much.
The majority of would you say the majority of attendees at conferences like this tend to hew on the Android side of things?
No, it's kind of mixed. It's a good mix of everything. there was a time when Apple was strong. It's a pendulum, you know, because there was like what 3 years ago the Apple exploits came out, and you know, people were standing in line and getting texts and sending texts that they were sending.
Crashing phones.
So it looks like this is the year of Android. Yeah, I was in it. It's horrible because I was joking around you just a few weeks ago that this is probably the year that you know, they go after mobile in a big way. And that, you know, before, at least you can, you know, pull out a phone and at least make a call. Just you know, do some basic stuff like that. You know, don't get on the Wi-Fi. Don't plug in. Don't do, you know, the basics. But, you know, if you need to send a text message, not an MMS, you know,
right.
But just not an SMS, but just a, you know, pure old, you know, I guess that's SMS.
Well, yes. That, yeah.
Yeah, by definition. Not MMS,
MMS
but
or
SMS.
Is what you're,
but yeah, so you just, you know, pure basic text message, and I don't think you can anymore.
Now,
there was some man-in-the-middle stuff. There was some femtocell stuff.
Yeah.
This year, it's just kind of all out. So if someone gets in the middle and you load, like, you know, a particular MMS or you get pushed to a particular site or... horror of horrors, you accidentally or you load any kind of application that has this embedded in it, it's kind of game over.
I've got a Motorola Razr in my closet still, if you want to borrow that.
I'm actually, I shouldn't say this on air, my burner phone this year is going to be a Firefox OS phone because I figure everyone's forgotten about it, and it still probably should work. I can get basic stuff. I'm going to be frustrated using it. Because the screen's about as big as my thumb, but we'll see how it goes.
One of our guys, Tim Lee, before he left ours to go work for Vox, he did a Firefox phone review, and he actually liked it quite a bit. He said it was not terrible, and it wasn't necessarily a viable alternative to do everything, but for like a light smartphone with internet browsing, which is really all you want, he said it worked fine.
Well, I think a lot of it, the OS, I've got no complaints necessarily with the OS, other than just, you know, it's kind of sparse on the application front. I got the $30, and this is the phone is now a year old because I got it for last DEF CON, I think, even before. It is the $30 Chinese super duper uber cheap phone that really, it feels like a $20 phone. So, yeah, it does.
Nice.
So it's, you know, it's one of those. It's not so much that the OS is bad. It's just that this hardware, no matter what it ran, it's a miserable piece of hardware.
But does it make calls?
Makes texts. I think, you know, the pixel thumbprint thing is about 50 pixels. So you can kind of you need to zoom in, and then, you know, it's like Morse code trying to get the alphabet in there. But if I need to send an emergency, like, Jake, save me.
Is it like
I
when
can get the emergency
my,
message?
When my Android guy Ron Amadio went kind of whole hog on cheap Android phones earlier, or I guess it was late last year, and we eBayed it was like the cheapest Android phone you could get. It was like a $25, and it was from India. I don't remember the brand, but like the worst thing about it was that when so many corners had been cut, it was like so cheap, but it was mostly usable except for when you actually had to use the keyboard. The interface was so slow and laggy that you'd start to type on the soft keyboard and the keys would lag like seconds after.
No, that's exactly what this was like, which makes it really horrible with, you know, typing mistakes because you'll hit backspace. I'll be like, you know, four corrections ahead of myself and it's still starting out like dear Jay. So yeah.
Or dear.
We should. I didn't. I have to admit, I have not looked at everything Pete sent out yet. Peter, are we talking about Android stuff later
on
the show?
It's on the list.
It's on the news.
My laptop is going out. The screen's flickering, and I'm afraid to touch it. So I think it's going to be a new laptop tomorrow morning. So yeah, I can't look at any of that right now.
Can't touch it.
Pot up, Pete, a little bit. He sounds a little bit quiet. Yeah, I don't know if it's just me or not.
It's on the thing.
But all right. Well, we got Pete on the line. Thank God. I don't know if you heard us talking, Pete, but we have a fundraiser next week, and we're flying kind of light in the loafers.
Nice.
Is that code for something?
That's code for Pete, come to Houston.
I know. Yeah, and
I think
I
he'd
guess,
already planned
I
to.
Yes, I had planned to, but yeah, to come for a fundraiser on my birthday.
on your birthday!
Well,
what better way to celebrate your birthday?
On my 50th birthday.
Is it really your 50th birthday?
Yes.
Wow. Oh, wow.
You don't look.
I look younger than I am.
Yeah, I wouldn't have guessed. 50.
Younger.
So what piece of hardware are you the same age as? Do you predate
Ooh.
Macs? Yes, you do. Predates
Unix. Predates Unix.
I predate man going to the moon.
Unix.
Yes, I predate.
What is Unix? Unix would be 64?
69.
Everybody dies
for Google. But I think it was 69.
So we're looking at, not to give too much of Pete Santella away, but we're looking for
When I was born, the Beatles were just a pop band that did catchy little tunes.
Wow. Well, you
can't. Not as old as Jay, though. So not as old as me. At the end of the day, I always have that.
Yeah, but Jay looks old. Pete doesn't.
I share a birthday with Yuri Gagarin flying in space.
Oh.
Well, share a year, birth year, not a birthday.
I should know when that is, but I don't.
Yuri's day.
Something.
Yuri's, yeah, 1961.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right. Because Shepard was May of 61, and Gagarin was just a couple months before.
Pete, you are as old as the Programma 101. It's the Italian company Olivetti. They were the first ones to kind of do the first PC, some argue. World's first personal computer.
They made typewriters, right?
I think so. Yeah, they're adding machines and typewriters.
In the year I was born, the first in-flight movie was shown on TWA Airlines.
You are the same age, Pete, as the Apollo guidance computer, which was first installed in its Block 1 revision in 1965.
Wow, yeah. You know, I heard that that on Apollo 11 that they almost had to cancel the mission because of...
Don't say it. Pete is referring to a piece I wrote this week.
You're talking about.
Thanks to the because of the anniversary of Apollo 11, I wrote a piece about the without spending more than just a couple of seconds on it, there were errors with the Apollo guidance computer during the landing of the lunar module on Apollo 11, and those errors are commonly chalked up to a checklist error, and that's not why they happened. I wrote a big piece about it. If you want to get your spaceflight knowledge on, check on ours. It's still on the front page, and look it up.
It does go deep geek on it. I definitely appreciated the...
Well, because it's such a fascinating problem. Why it all happened, it's because it was a combination of digital and analog. It's just one of those really cool things. When you start getting into computers that are that old, there are analog aspects to
little
them.
Whirring bits.
That you don't... things that you... I mean, that were not
Piggy
like inside
Chaz.
The computer. It was a digital computer, but I mean, the problem had to do with electrical frequencies and mismatched electrical... It's a crazy thing, man.
Hand-wound
so
ferrite
much,
cores.
It had that, yeah. There's so much of that stuff that's out there if you find the right books and dig into it. I mean, it's just so fascinating. But anyway, so happy... unbirthday, Pete, and I guess we'll catch you next week.
In 1 week. Yeah, I think today is Will Wheaton's birthday.
Is it really?
It actually is.
Well, now that's cool. There's a guy who's like turned a down career into a massively up career.
I don't know if it was ever down. I don't know if you ever, I wouldn't call being, you know,
hated by.
Yeah, being Mr. Young Master Crusher.
Internet.
Well, you know, and he said, I mean, he's pretty recently he's come out and said that he's had huge issues with depression for a long time, but I've read a lot of stuff from him saying that when he was actually doing Star Trek The Next Generation, which for people of my generation was like the biggest exposure to Will Wheaton, that he didn't really realize because he was, I think he filmed the show from between he was 13 and like 18
he
think,
was
when
clueless.
He left. Yeah, he said he was like, he treated it like, this is crap, I hate being here, this is dumb, I don't like, this is a stupid job, you know, I'd rather be going off doing my own thing, hanging out with friends.
Shatner was mean to him.
And only, yeah, and
true,
only,
true story.
And only later, you know, when he grew up and, as most people do, became not stupid and not a teenager, he realized, you know, what the opportunity that he had and how he'd kind of...
No, yeah,
well,
certainly.
He's probably kind of geeky anyway. And then just I give him props, just the fact that he was, you know, quasi-child star and he didn't die or, you know, start doing, you know, questionable media or, you know, robbing liquor stores, running people over. You know, he wins right there.
Yeah.
And but he's definitely he's parlayed into an awesome geek
dynasty.
Well, you
know, you wake up one day and you go, I have a serious cachet of nerd cred.
That you will never wash off. Mm-hmm. It's never going to come off. You can only embrace it.
Yeah, so you just, you know, it's like.
Well, and to be fair to him, for you know, I didn't like him. I didn't hate him with the force of a thousand burning suns like a lot of people. But, you know, he was irritating and all that. But to be fair, he didn't write the parts or direct the episodes. Somebody wrote up though, you know, somebody wrote the dialogue. It's not like he went in the writer's room and forced them to write his part the way that it was.
Well,
or did he?
A lot of that
well,
was
Well, come
Gene
on.
Roddenberry.
I mean, what do you expect from a precocious child on a starship anyway?
With an above genius quality mind.
Well, that's the thing. I was of that age. I was young enough.
Doogie Howser in space.
Yeah, I was young enough where I didn't identify with him, but I wanted to take his place. I'm like, okay, I could do better than you. Get move over. Let me time travel. Just move on over. This wanderer stuff is weird.
Could
traveler.
You have done that?
And then I actually, so he never totally annoyed me. I was just like, you know, indifference really. And then I bumped into him at Linicon, which was the big Linux open source, you know, funness thing that happened in Houston a while ago.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, and actually Jay Maynard's birthday was yesterday, I want to say. It's weird, a string of birthdays. So, yeah, I sat next to Jay Maynard, who's Tron guy, front row at Linicon, and then we went to, I think I told you this story, but never on the air.
He
was in full Tron costume. I've got a picture. Yeah, I've got a picture of me sitting down.
I don't think you can find him not wearing that outfit.
That costume looks better when he's standing up. Once he sits down, it loses. It goes lopsided.
Poor Tron
in one direction. Yeah, the disc just kind of doesn't where it should be. So we went. I went to the Red versus Blue thing, and these were the drunken gamers that did like a lot of the skits. We played some of them on air a while ago. One of the big ones was, you know, why you should switch to the Mac when they had all those Switch commercials. And he's like, I switched because of the games, because, you know, Breakout and Super Breakout.
Photoshop.
Photoshop.
That's,
yeah.
Gus Sorolla.
It's Gus, yeah. So
actually,
it's these guys. Cool. So we wound up, we went, they had a talk. It was Red versus Blue. They also do the, you know, the famous Red versus Blue videos, which is like the Mac and the stuff on YouTube where they, you know, they do the animation, they do the voiceovers. And it's kind of funny. It's still going. It's on Netflix. It's all over the place. So
talk about parlaying.
We go to to Red versus Blue talk, and no one's in there. It's like me and one other dude and the Red versus Blue guys, and we're just kind of sitting there for 5 or 10
really?
Minutes. Like, no one showed.
I would have expected that to be packed.
This is weird. Linicon was kind of a sleeper thing. I think this might have been its first or second year. It didn't make it a third year. This might have been its second year, and we were doing cool things like, you know, like 1 minute liquid nitrogen ice cream, and, you know, in the very center room. I forget what the kits were called, but it's like the like an erector set where you can do the big mouse trap kind of things with all the balls that roll over the place, and you
awesome.
Can set off stuff like that. There's a chaos machine or something like that. Someone on IRC, KD5, probably knows what this thing is called. It was awesome. So they started building this. Whoever wanted to work on it in the middle of the room could build it out. So jump forward. We go. It's like, you know, 5, 6 in the evening. We go into the Red versus. I go into the Red versus Blue presentation.
Is this it, like... George.
No, it's at, I forget. I think it. No. This is in Austin.
I thought you said it was here.
No, it's in Austin.
Okay.
So it was the one for Texas.
You did say here, though.
I did say here. Oops.
You said Houston. Yeah.
Oops. I
meant
more Texas. More Texas. Not.
Tell us about Will Wheaton.
So we go in, and they're like, no one shows up. So they're like, hey, let's take this to the bar. Any objections? And like, no. And this is a little bitty. I think it was like, is there a Red Lion Hotel? It's the motel / hotel that as you come into Austin on 290, it's the one on the right hand side when 290 kind of hits 35.
So this is not like the Hilton of the Americas.
No, it's not a super nice hotel. And so this bar is kind of dingy. So we're in there, and we go in, and the next thing you know, Will Wheaton walks in, and it's just, the bar is lonely. The bar is almost as lonely as Red versus Blue talk was. So it's just us in there now. And Will Wheaton walks in. I'm like,
this
we just kind of look
like,
at each other.
This would be like the highlight of my life.
Yeah, I know. And we pull up a bar, and I'm like, I'm having beers with, you know, Red versus Blue and Will Wheaton. I'm thinking, man, it must be so cool to be Will Wheaton. And then I look over, and I just feel this presence. And I look over, and there's this kind of awkward, super awkward, slightly creepy person that's just been staring at Will for like 2 minutes or 3 minutes, and Will just slowly looks over and he's like, hi, and the guy is like, Will Wheaton. You know, kind of like that, and the guy
please
just like stood.
You were doing that on skin. The inside.
Yeah, so more or less I was, but so while we were all having beers and whatever, Mr. Wheaton had to deal with, you know, super fan number one, very awkward way that did not realize, you know, hey, you know, it's we chatted up, maybe you should not breathe on me as
God
close as
like,
you are.
Could you sign my skin? Made
so suddenly I'm
flesh.
Like, you know, maybe it's good that, you know, I'm not Will Wheaton.
I'm sure that some of his fan base falls into that spectrum.
So, yeah, so I have no idea if he would remember me. He might remember the story and the whole Red versus Blue in
he
context.
Might.
But,
what,
you know,
did you have a fabulous mustache still?
I did
that?
Not. No. This is all new. This was early. This was probably 2002,
oh,
2003.
Wow.
I'd have to go back and
this
look
is
the
where you, when you were wearing blue shades.
This is my blue shades.
Blue tinted shades.
This actually would be when
period.
Will Wheaton, like, before Will Wheaton was doing Comic-Con.
Yeah, this is what
probably.
I mean. This was
when he was on the way back.
Oh, and a bucket hat, right?
What's that?
And a bucket hat. A white bucket hat and blue tinted shirt.
No, this might have been my more ever so slightly stylish period because I had a girlfriend at the time. Just for a short amount of time. So I might have been. And she actually was in Austin while I was doing this Linicon thing. So I was like, yeah, let's go to Austin. It'll be cool. And, you know, and kind of had this dual life, kind of like I'm going to run away and be geeky. And then like, hey, I'm cool. Check me out and run away and be geeky.
I talked with Will Wheaton today, honey.
I want to say our own KD5 was there.
This
he attended
is probably
as well.
The Will Wheaton Barrett.
That's probably close. Yeah, that's within a year or two.
Barrett looks like he's taken some of my weight and given it to himself.
That might have been a little bit earlier. That may have been like circa 2002.
This was 2003.
Okay.
KD5 said that Steve Jackson brought a chaos machine.
So it was called the Chaos Machine, and Steve Jackson, he did not bring one.
Oh, was
like
that during the early part of the EFF stuff going on with Steve Jackson games?
Yeah, there was a lot of really cool stuff all happening at this con.
Right.
So yeah, he didn't bring just one Chaos Machine kit. I think he brought like dozens upon dozens of them to where it literally filled the lobby of the room by the end of the weekend.
Jeez.
It was impressive.
Let's have our own con where Will Wheaton comes and Steve Jackson comes.
And nobody comes.
Nobody else.
I'll just give Will Wheaton a call and be like, hey, Will Wheaton, do you remember me?
It's BC, man.
I think he got, like, he was always kind of known, you know, whether like Pete said, some hated, some really hated him, some were, you know, whatever. But I think what really was the bring out thing when he did the couple of appearances on, what's the Bazinga show?
Oh, yeah.
Oh,
Big Bang Theory.
Because he kind of came up and he was like the gaming nemesis of Sheldon.
He'd already turned around by then.
At least when did he break out?
In gaming and hacker culture, he'd already turned around by then.
Because when you know who he is, it's kind of hard. G4 stuff?
I mean, he started a blog or something.
He started a blog. He published a book.
Oh, and then Slash. He was also pretty big on Slashdot. He was really well known on Slashdot. But that's what I mean. His celebrity was always present, kind of, but always in smaller circles. He was like, what was it, Clever Nickname?
Clever Nickname on Slashdot. And there was always a chance if you posted something cool that, like, everyone
would comment.
You might get a comment
that's what I mean.
From Will Wheaton. And it was like, well, and everybody was, as soon as Slashdot rolled out Friends and Foes, everybody befriended Will Wheaton. Mm-hmm. Like, Will Wheaton and John Carmack, I think, immediately were like, everybody was friends with them. Their friends list must have been enormous and ludicrously long. Oh man, good times. Well, that killed a half hour.
Well, and I think
we blame you, Will Wheaton.
He went with like he was fairly legit post Star Trek. Didn't he spend some time working? He worked at New Tech with a video toaster and that stuff. Here we go. I just called up his Wikipedia.
Possibly. I know he was early on the net with, you know, Will.net.
He moved to Kansas, and so he was working, you know, I mean, so he was legit. He was working in the kind of technology, you know, where technology and entertainment kind of intersected, because the video toaster was pretty awesome. He was doing product testing and quality controls.
I know he's in a video toaster promo video. I watched it on YouTube just relatively recently, and he's got, like, the most epic 90s side-shaved hairdo, like, ever.
But so he went in and did some kind of legit stuff as opposed to just the... He at least, I mean, we'll give him credit. He went into the technology business and did some actual business. Yeah. He obviously didn't become a coder, but he also didn't do the, like... Adam West's approach to never really doing anything again and just touring to cons as Batman.
I admire Adam West for that, though. That's awesome. He's owning that.
Well, yeah, now basically he's come to where his crazy is kind of cute and endearing instead of disturbing. Disturbing and twisted like it was.
God,
like it seemed
in
the 70s.
Toaster commercial.
Yeah.
The New Tech Video Toaster 4000.
Yes, he was. There was a lot of people in New Tech commercials.
New Tech
weird.
Is still around, and they do the what their latest thing. You know, they've gotten to where it's for stuff over the internet. And I know if like This Week in Tech uses a bunch of their equipment to do serious stuff. I mean, they've taken a multi-million-dollar TV studio and put it into a box that's under a couple $100,000 now.
We had in high school over at Creek. In that 90, 95 and 96, we had a secondhand video toaster, Amiga video toaster, or New Tech video toaster that we bought and just used the heck out of. And it was a great, I mean, compared to fiddling with two VCRs trying to edit stuff together, it was absolutely amazing for the time. And you could always tell, it's kind of funny, once you fiddle with a video toaster for a little while and you get kind of a feel for how it looks and look at, like, the transition effects it has, and then... You kind of watch TV, especially like local news broadcasts, or you watch like small movies. You can immediately tell what was edited on a video toaster, especially like local news broadcasts. They use all the same transitions and fades. It's like really cool. But I mean, yeah, that's an amazing product. I mean, geez, that's almost worth its own show. And wasn't there like an Amiga anniversary like this week? Wasn't this week an important
40
something? I swear it was. There was some kind of like big fancy Amiga anniversary just this week.
I think New Tech is still in. I think they're in San Antonio. If it, you know, I know they
July
were in 23rd. Kansas,
30,
and I think
30th.
Their headquarters is in San Antonio.
Yeah,
30th birthday on the 23rd. Which Jay is correct.
Which 7 days ago,
Yeah, I remember. You could always spot the Amiga user in a crowd of computer users because they would be the ones screaming and talking about how they're an Amiga user. They're like the vegans of the computer world.
Well, no, they were kind of the first Apple zealots of the computer. About using Amiga. They were, you know, they had color graphics. They were
the Amiga had
edge.
Really awesome graphics.
It did have awesome
graphics. Yeah, for the sound and graphics
and good sound.
Well, yeah, it was designed ground up by Jay Miner and his folks to do that, and it had extra custom hardware. Had a custom sound chip, custom graphics chip. We actually ran, not to keep pimping ours, but we ran a great retrospective by Jeremy Reimer, one of our freelancers, who like dug into the history of the Amiga super deep, and it was just absolutely fascinating, both for how cool the system was and for just how poorly Commodore treated it when they had it. I mean, talk about absolutely failing to capitalize on what they had.
See what you get for not being on the air on time, Pete? The whole show is spun out of control. We haven't even. We're just like all over the place. I mean, it's great conversation. Don't get me wrong; it's great conversation.
We can do. We can do news.
We
can do can news
we? Are
you
sure?
Want.
I guess you've declared yourself in charge, Mr. Haig.
Yeah, why don't we do that? You're sitting right seat, Jay. You're driving this ship.
I don't. Apparently, it's not with a P either. And I'm not driving. I'm not shoveling it. I'm not shoveling this ship. All right. Well, great conversation, but
I said ship.
I said ship too.
Okay. Just making sure you didn't think I didn't say ship.
There's no doubt in my mind whatsoever.
Easy, sailors.
Driving all right. This ship, if one drives
just
ships.
Cut the ship unless
go
out to
let's
sea.
Sail on. We all sail on. All right, so we're gonna.
It's time for a shanty.
Oh, working on the computer all day. Heave ho, reboot. Oh, off and on. Click.
What are we doing?
I don't know. We're gonna wrestle this thing back under control and go to San Antonio for the Technology Bites Info Shot. Take it away, Info Shot.
It's the Technology Bites Info Shot. Technology news and commentary by Peter Hughes. Injected directly into your skull.
Well, this one I thought about if it was a try, buy, or fry, but it's too new a technology, and there's a little bit more time before they can implement it, so it's news. Intel and Micron announced basically, I think you could call it a revolutionary non-volatile memory technology that the companies claim is the first major breakthrough in that space since the introduction of NAND flash in 1989. Essentially, it's called 3D Crosspoint, but they spell it X Point. It's said to be 1,000 times faster than NAND, with up to 1,000 times greater endurance, meaning the number of times you can read and write, which that's times a NAND drive, while packing in 10 times the density of conventional DRAM components. Basically, it works as a stackable, transistorless, three-dimensional checkerboard architecture in which memory cells can be addressed individually as they sit at the intersection of word and bit lines. This design allows the system to write and read data in smaller batches, which makes it faster and more efficient. With low latency overhead, a single 3D XPoint module can serve both system and storage needs. Any number of computing applications can benefit from such fast and efficient technology. They say that it could accelerate machine learning systems or enable medical researchers to study genetics, track disease in real time. That's from their press release. Intel and Micron plan to release sample units to select hardware manufacturers later this year and plan to roll out independent product lines through 2016. So the nice part about this one is they have a path. It's Intel and Micron, which are not the kind of companies. They don't just FUD this, you know, where they'll announce it and then they'll stall it off and it'll be 2020 before we have any. That, you know, they have at least some credibility in getting close to their release dates. And you know, the company that should maybe be sweating it now is I think Hewlett Packard, because their memory technology, the one that was non-volatile, you know, and so on, has not been progressing as fast. And I certainly haven't heard anything along the lines of them announcing sample units this year and independent product in 2016. So it could be very interesting. And the other thing, you know, the day may come where with this kind of technology, where how much RAM do you have and how big is your storage drive? At some point, we'll have to get away from hard drive because it's not really the same anymore. Like solid state drive is not a hard drive. Where the line between how much RAM do you have and how much storage do you have, those will just be one thing. Where it'll be using both, it'll be using the same memory technology for both, and you can kind of get this sort of instant startup, etc. That people have dreamed of for many years, as many years spent sitting waiting for their computer to boot up. And then this one on an interesting trend thing for news. Tablets are reigning in enterprise education, but on the consumer market, it's the market is apparently declining. This is from IDC. Although Tim Cook remains bullish on the future of tablets, Apple and the market generally for tablets is declining as consumers continue to favor large screen smartphones for tablet-like functions. And as companies struggle to figure out what the replacement cycle for these still popular devices should be, according to research from IT, Apple sold 11.2 million iPads with shipments of 10.9 million in its fiscal third quarter, which is down from 13.7 million sold in the previous quarter. And apparently there will be one more quarter of declining iPad sales. The thing I'll say on that, you know, these sale numbers things, I only include it because of the trend stuff. But the, you know, one of the things is we're now in the season where we're coming up on announcing new iPads. So the fact that sales slow down on them leading into that is not quite that huge a shocker. But the thing is, sales of the iPad have been declining at a rate faster than the usual seasonal variances would suggest. However, in part because of a perception among early adopters that current models are not sufficiently different enough to make upgrading from, say, an iPad 2, which was produced in 2011 and sold for 3 years, that it's not compelling enough to upgrade from that. So people have been holding on to them. The next model of iPad, coupled with the much speedier and more efficient iOS 9, which the thing about it with it being more efficient, it may make those older ones useful for longer, which would, again, not lead to more and more sales. But what's clear is that competitors who often produce lower spec and consequently cheaper tablets had some success in flooding the existing tablet market with low-end versions, particularly in developing markets. And so tablets are eventually expected to replace low-end desktops and to a lesser extent notebooks for typical users in the long term. The initial popularity of the iPad and its alternatives has mostly been as a passive entertainment device with notebooks preferred for content creation. So rumors have suggested, and Tim Cook himself has hinted, that future innovations will add value to the iPad and perhaps trigger an upgrade cycle or attract new buyers through new features, you know, like the iPad Pro and some of that. But we can talk about that in Bite of the Apple. And finally, kind of the top story, and we've hinted at it since the beginning of the show and hadn't gotten all the way into talking about it, but Android users beware. Apparently, up to 95% of Android phones could be hacked with one text. Ouch. The Joshua Drake, VP of Platform Research and Exploitation at the cybersecurity firm Zimperium's Z Labs division, wow, reported the flaw to Google earlier this year, but he says that most manufacturers have not made fixes available to consumers. The security hole puts 950 million Android devices at risk. The hack relies on bugs in StageFright, a media playback service that's built into Android. All the hackers need is a phone number. Once they send a photo or video MMS message to a phone, they have full access. Security flaw present in most Android phones manufactured after 2010 allows hackers to steal and monitor the contents of a phone. In other words, the hacker has complete control a phone owner doesn't even have to open the text for the attack to take effect. How's that? Google has released patches for the vulnerability, but its Imperium urged users to take action since those updates may be slow to come, and it's unlikely that Google will even release patches for older devices. Joshua Drake, the guy who was talking about it earlier, will be reporting on these findings at the Black Hat Hacker Conference in Las Vegas next week if you need to learn more about it. I guess the thing I don't see with they don't have this one named, and I thought it was the same thing, but I'm wondering if it's not. But is it Rowhammer? Has anybody heard about Rowhammer?
Is that the one that who was it, Trend Micro, announced last night?
I think so. The one that basically is a hardware. It's in the like hardware level of. No. I'm trying to look it up
now.
There
are three different ones out. No, Trend Micro came across last one. I don't think they've necessarily given it a name yet. It just may have a CVE. But this only gets only about half of Android devices in use today. I think it affects everything from 4.3 all the way up to the most current 5.1.1. And more or less, it's how they deal with the video files that use the Matroska container. And that's just, it's like a video indexing, a way to index a video. So if you put a laced MK4 file, or MKV file out there, and your Android system reads it, you're gone. So, and you can send it the same way. You can send it through a text message. You can have them visit a website with the appropriate JavaScript on there. Or if you want to permanently disable the phone forever, if you can get them to install like an APK or any kind of a program that has this built into it, it's over. So this one actually, it kills the phone. You can't hear calls coming in, no texts coming in. If the phone's locked, you can't unlock it. It's pretty ugly. And it sounds like you may have
Now here's the new one. This is a separate one. I guess this stuff all comes out because we're coming up on you know, Black Hat and DEF CON and all that stuff. The deal is Rowhammer. Rowhammer.js is a new security attack revealed in a paper by security researchers Daniel Gruss, Clementine Maurice, and Stefan Mangard. Brings a truly new wrinkle to our understanding of computer vulnerabilities. The tech industry has known about the bug that Rowhammer exploits for several years, but it was only this March that researchers at Google's Project Zero revealed how it could be used by attackers. And the deal is, it doesn't afflict your software. It finds a weakness in the hardware using a physical problem with how current memory chips are constructed. So it doesn't matter whether you're using what operating system you're using or if you're using an Intel chip or AMD or any of the rest, the exploit works. And the paper that these people put out shows how to exploit it from a simple web page. Basically, let's see, chip makers have known about Rowhammer since 2012. The problem affects Intel processors going back as far as 2009. Describing a remote JavaScript attack using Rowhammer, the paper is a wake-up call. Previously, taking advantage of Rowhammer required local program execution on a computer. In other words, you had to have partly compromised it. But now, any web page could potentially exploit Rowhammer to arbitrarily access your data, perhaps even gain control over the computer. And because it's down at the level of the physical circuits in your memory chips. As the security researchers explained, it is, quote, the first remote software-induced hardware fault attack. You know, the big problem, the thing that held it back before, was the need of physical access. And apparently now they've figured out a way to use JavaScript to get at it.
Yeah, there's exploit code out there on GitHub for Linux under Google/Rowhammer-test if people want to play around with crashing their own machines.
But yeah, now that it could just be a piece of JavaScript in a web page, you know, you're really looking at something that, you know, think about how much malicious JavaScript has been slipped through ad networks and stuff like that. So, you know, apparently bit flips caused by Rowhammering breach the CPU's memory protection. They say that. And what's new with Rowhammer is how that border is made porous. Since it's not a code bug, you can't patch it that way. So I don't know what the, I'm looking to see where's the part where they say, here's what you can do to, basically would take a BIOS firmware update to really get rid of the problem. So, we can look, we'll look and see if there's more. That just came out. I have a feeling that if there's a story, you know, the tough part is there's so many, but I have a feeling that if there's a story that's going to get really, really big in the next week, I think Rowhammer is the one you maybe remember, that you may have to remember, because it takes the most to fix. You don't just have to patch something. You know, the Android one affects, you know, almost a billion phones, but there actually are patches coming where they can do something about it. But this deal where you have to, like, redo the BIOS on your computer, there's going to be a lot more people who just aren't going to change it, who aren't going to know how to do it, and it's a big pain to do that for, say, everything with an Intel processor since, what was it, 2009? That could be a... I'm sort of surprised that one hasn't been a bigger story in the course of the day, but that, you know, it may have just gotten started.
Well, I'm looking forward to getting all of my gear hacked at DEF CON this year.
Just going to keep everything in power down mode.
Oh, it feels like. Yeah, that's well, right, Lassie.
Yeah. Yeah.
Your what? The BIOS the needs to be updated.
your Android OS needs to be updated, and you're infected with viruses.
So I mean, there is something to point out here. Also, the other side of this complicated, scary issue of 95% of, or whatever the percentage was, of Android phones are vulnerable to blah blah blah. So the real reason why that is a tremendous issue is that a tremendous number of Android phones, you can't just go and upgrade it. You can't just be like, oh, well, there's a bug in my phone, so I'll just install the latest version of Android and we'll call it done. You just
Well, a lot of handsets have been abandoned by the vendors that put them out as the issue.
Yeah.
So you get a lot of, and a lot of them, you know, they'll release a version of Android and they just never go back and really pay attention to it ever
again. They don't want
to.
Now, it's two different sets of companies.
Google's addressing that going forward, but there are some older phones out there, some older handsets in the field that'll never see an update for this.
Well, and for an issue like this, it may not necessarily even be something that you could address with Google. I mean, the way Google addresses a lot of this is Google offloads as much core functionality into the API side as they can, which makes them less dependent on having to wait on, for example, AT&T to vet an Android upgrade, or for Sony to vet an Android upgrade for their handsets. That's kind of the gate, is Google can release an update from Android 4.2 to 4.3, but
The vendors have to pick it up.
But yeah,
and
the
roll
vendors
it out
have
and
to
approve
pick it up.
So it's a lot slower, unless you're on pure Android.
Yes.
You know, which is pretty much the flagship Google phone if you're getting one of the Nexuses.
And so that's kind of the thing, right? Even if Google issues a patch for this tomorrow, and I have every confidence that they're working, you know, on as many of these open issues as they can.
They knew about this. So JDuck is that's Josh Drake. So I think he's even on Twitter as JDuck. But he told Google back in April, in like mid to early April, and they did nothing. So they're only doing, even looking at it now, I think, because the publicity is getting, because the lead up to, you know, like DEF CON and Black Hat, you know, a lot of the security mags, just plain old tech mags are looking to do security stories. So it's getting, you know, it's got a little bit more legs than it might have a few months ago. But they knew about it 3 months ago. So it's like they had, you know, 3 or 4 months to fix this, and they did not.
Well, and if you had been doing the finger quotes right thing and been running, you know, Cyanogen with or without AOSP on it or whatever, would you be okay right now? And I don't think the answer is yes. I think the answer is no.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, so full public disclosure at Black Hat and then again at DEF CON. I don't know if they're going to be releasing toolkits or not, but, I mean, you'll at that point, I guess Monday or Tuesday at Black Hat, people will know how to go out and exploit this just by hand-rolling their own code.
Whee!
Fun!
Well, yeah, I guess, although one thing that this, you know, with this exploit being for 95% of Android phones and stuff like that is, there's not any reason to feel more safe just because you aren't at DEF CON or aren't at Black Hat.
Right.
You know, when they can put an exploit in a web page and get you, or they can just text, you know, text a number and get you, then, you know, don't compartmentalize this one, I guess would be the thing the message I would want to get out there is, you know, this stuff is serious, and it's not just localized on Las Vegas, well, or you know, maybe it is for the next 2 weeks, but after that it ain't.
When tens of thousands of enthusiastic computer nerds descend on DEF CON in Las Vegas, learn a bunch of new information, they are quick to rush out and want to apply their newfound knowledge. You know, but it's not just zero-day exploits that, you know, are going on there. I mean, it is a hacking convention in the truest sense of the word. I mean, I've watched people that I know and love learn skills at DEF CON and apply them in everyday life as soon as they learned them. He said, looking at Barrett, remembering the time that he bumped the lock in the hotel room. You know, so it's like, oh, because it's just like anything.
Well, you want to learn it. You want to exercise it and practice.
You want to see it in real life and see how it plays out. And so even though there may be a less than nefarious reason that people are doing it, they're going to go and see if they can do it. I mean, when I first learned that you can send certain IP commands to a Windows computer and force it to reboot, I did it to my coworker.
You know, ping of death for everybody. You get a ping.
You get a ping.
When you learned about Tracer-T and other hacker tools.
Tracer-T is the best.
Now, the rough stuff about this and a lot of stuff that you don't hear about, people say like, hey, patches are coming out, you've got to patch. You'll hear that it's important that you patch, you need to get it out. But these security holes that are announced, they've been out there probably since, a lot of times the beginning of the software. It's like these things have been out there. They don't tell you the truth, which is the developers really, really, really messed up. And it's amazing that no one has found this yet. And probably someone's already in your computer.
What about,
you're already a zombie,
there is an economy built around zero-day exploits.
Yeah, we saw this too with the hacking team, just seeing like what they were sitting on, with their flash exploits and, to see how long they'd had those tools, and pretty much they're guaranteeing, hey, you send, client or, sell it to your clients, send, whoever you want to this page, and you own them. That stuff is out there in the wild, and like Jay Lee said, there are black markets, gray markets where you can go and you show up with $100,000 and you can walk away with a very nice, not even 0 day, I guess it's still a 0 day.
Yeah.
Until you use it. But yeah, these are like, governments, these are corporations, these are baddies, these are goodies,
No, but there was a couple of businesses that were around both software and hardware hacking exploits that they could use. I can't remember that one device the guy had that just basically was Nmap on steroids, and this Wi-Fi device that would basically detect everything around it,
everything.
And scan it, and then give you a nice little readout on what all was vulnerable around you. So it's definitely out there. It's real interesting, and again, I don't think it's all about people wanting to be necessarily malicious and harmful, but they will at least inadvertently be that way when they start playing with this. And then there will be others that looking to take advantage.
It's the sheer numbers of people going. You it only takes a couple of bad apples to do it, or someone comes back and shows a friend that may not have the same morals as some of the people going to DEF CON, and that starts
to
come out.
I just had this there, and I won't say the vendor on the air, but there's a vendor that I do business with on the internet who has a secure commerce site. And I bought something from them, and a few weeks later, some strange charges showed up on my credit card.
Womp womp.
And I thought, well, I knew it was one of a couple of places that could have gotten that credit card info. So the next time I did business there on a lark, I used a credit card that I don't use hardly ever. And I made one purchase there, and then 2 weeks later, a charge shows up at Walmart in Ohio. My credit card. Fortunately, there's good fraud protection out there, but this is, it's this kind of stuff is out there.
Is your bank covered, Jade Helm?
Yeah. I have the Jade Helm card from Texas Bank of, go away, Obama.
The Texas Gold Depository.
No, I mean, there's stuff out there, and it's good to be aware of it. It can get to the point where it becomes kind of overwhelming and frightening because, I mean, you have things like, your phone being exploited by some kind of text message malware that you can get, or, even worse, your credit card gets taken or your identity gets stolen. I had a coworker tell me today that she got a letter from the IRS, and she was at least smart enough to, look up the number and go to the IRS webpage and look up to see if the phone number matched the letter on that she got. And it was a legitimate letter from the IRS, and the IRS apparently had one of their databases cracked in 2013 from people filing I don't know if it was electronic filing or what, but all of her information got stolen, and they didn't contact her to tell her it had happened until they detected activity on her Social Security number. So then they notified her that her stuff had been taken 2 years ago and was now being used, and found out that she's got a mortgage on a house in Maryland and some some other things going on there.
There's a market for these too. I mean, there are markets where you can
go to buy. Well, I have to believe that whoever got my credit card actually got the information from whatever exploit was running on this. I don't know if it was the site sold it, but somebody actually took my credit card information and made a credit card went and used it. It wasn't like the first time it happened, they did a home shopping network. It was online. The second time they did it was somebody else, and they actually walked into a brick and mortar store and used my credit card. So that it's just frightening. There's got to be an entire market of people that say, you know, how do these people even find who's selling the cars?
There are. It's you call it the quote-unquote dark web, but a lot of it's, like just IRC channels.
But the people
channels.
Who are shopping for, blenders on a home shopping network, what are they doing on the dark web?
It's not necessarily those people. These are people, it's like kind of like the main, I don't want to say kingpins, but there are people that buy these things in bulk. They sell for anywhere between like $5 to $20, for someone's identity, depending on, like how high the credit rating is, if they've got good credit, all that kind of stuff. There's a whole big market for it. There was a few years ago, Vice did something with the whole credit card making thing, and they did, it's actually on YouTube. You can go out and see this. So you're watching, and it's, how it doesn't show how he gets the credit cards, but more or less it shows that he gets the credit card number, and it goes through the process of him making a credit card and how it's not embossed and all these things. And
they're
then
all
he's
over the dark web.
Yeah, they're all cheap.
Yeah,
they really are cheap. So he goes to, they show, they're filming him. They've got his voice a little bit changed maybe, and they're not showing his face. But he goes and he's like, all right, now what we're going to do is we're going to take this credit card and we're going to go to Best Buy and we're going to buy some stuff and return and do all this stuff. And he goes and they get out of the car and it's Houston. It's the Houston Best Buy, the Houston Galleria Best Buy. So that's going on right in our own city. It's there. So
yeah. Crazy.
Be careful.
So I guess what they're doing is they're buying something on credit and then returning it for the cash.
Hey, returning it, or they just, they'll put it on Craigslist for like $200 cash, brand new iPad. Someone meets them in the parking lot, boom, and they're gone.
Because usually people won't give you back cash.
Boom goes
the credit rating.
No, but they sell it, and there's also dark websites. If you want to go find, a $100 iPad, you can go do that too.
Lord,
definitely
Lord.
Stolen.
All right, well, that music tells us we are going to pause. Take a short break, take care of some station business.
And come back with the Barrett Time.
Barrett Time!
That was Barrett Time. Barrett Time will be in Vegas.
All right, well, you're listening to Technology Bites. I'm Jay Lee.
I'm Peter Hughes.
I'm Flicted.
I'm Barrett.
I'm Lee. And that's it.
That's it.
In today's complex world, filled with complicated instructions like do this, turn here, don't staple, fold, spindle, tape, or mutilate, one way, etc., etc., why not take a break from all of this? Not near a seashore or relaxing in a tropical paradise. Well, the surf's up over at kpft.org. So mouse on over to kpft.org and pledge and renew online. It's easy, uncomplicated, and will give you that warm and fuzzy feeling of having done something good for yourself and your community. So wax that mouse, hang 10, and surf over to kpft.org and renew your membership and pledge online at kpft.org. Thank you for supporting KPFT Houston, Radio for Peace. Mahalo.
KPFT and Electro Love Radio Show are seeking sponsors for Electro Love Fest, a concert event this November 7th. The event will include rock and roll in the festive setting at Last Concert Cafe and the music of Fish, Pink Floyd, and the Talking Heads by some great Texas bands. $500 sponsors get a chance to co-host Electro Love Radio Show, repeat on-air mention, event banner display, mention of the KPFT email news, event admission and dinner for four with eight drinks, your logo on posters, thanks from the stage, meet the headliners, and get a signed poster. $100 sponsors will receive thanks on the air, logo on printed material, two admissions, thanks from the stage, and meet the bands. Proceeds from the event will benefit KPFT. We hope you'll join us and invite staff and friends. This will be big fun and an opportunity to reach thousands of KPFT listeners while helping community radio. Please call Hank Lamb at 936-239-0040 or Robin Lewis at 713-526-4000, extension 315 for details.
KPFT Houston.
You're listening to 90.1 FM KPFT Houston.
Barrett time.
Hey, Barrett.
What's happening? All right, so we do, you know, in the first hour of Technology Bites, we've been talking on and off about DEF CON, so that is happening next week, and as a result of that happening next week, that the Geek Gathering is not going to officially happen that Friday because three of us will be off at the Big Geek Gathering, but we're going to have a Geek Gathering the following
immediately
Friday.
Immediately once we get back.
The DEF CON debrief, so that'll be a good DEF CON to attend if you... Or a good geek gathering.
It'll be a DEF CON-ish geek gathering. We'll bring out whatever we have. We'll bring out stories. We will probably wear T-shirts. We will invite other DEF CON attendees to come out and do the same. So it'll be good.
I don't know anything about this.
You just were told. Now you know.
Back.
Backwater slip?
Yeah.
I really will save you.
I looked this up and it's not there. So I don't know what this is.
You need to actually describe what you're holding.
There was a note in our box to play something, and we're looking for it to play, and we didn't find it.
Are we supposed to mention transmitter?
Yes.
I keep forgetting. Yeah, I wanted to mention that.
Yes. Can you hear me now? Maybe not.
There's an Indiegogo campaign.
Yes. Is Jay going to? Who's going to do this?
Jay better do it.
No, you do it.
Yeah, I barely know. I was overhearing Jay's conversation with Dwayne earlier.
If you go to kpft.org, you'll find information about it. But we are raising money to pay for a new transmitter.
I think it's $20,000. I think 40. A lot of the money's already
We're well, most 40. Of the way
they
there,
it to
I believe.
40? I thought it was 20.
Yeah, let's see 40. How we're doing here.
Let's actually
Did they
go
change
look.
It? Because a few yeah, days ago it was 20.
Maybe they have 20 to go, but I know that Dwayne said that this station...
They said that. I thought they 40. Said it was 40,000.
Well,
they
said they had already raised... a fair bit like
yeah
so what I haven't talked to anybody at the station. I've only seen stuff online and in articles and the Indiegogo campaign website, and it said they had already raised a fair bit of money. It's to get a digital transmitter, which
actually because they
can't use the one that they've got now. They can't run it to full capacity because the location it's at isn't able to deal with the heat and stuff.
The goal is 20,000.
Dwayne!
And they crossed crossed 10,000 a few days ago, or maybe a week ago. It was a few days ago, I think. They crossed 10,000. So they're over halfway there to the goal.
Well, and that's what they're raising the last bit that they need. The actual total to replace the transmitter is $100,000. So they're just doing, basically we're down to the last 10% of the money that needs to be raised to take KPFT to full power again.
But they said they already have the equipment like on a dock waiting to be shipped to us. And the problem with as far as the FCC goes is the policy for broadcast frequencies is kind of if you don't use it, they'll take it away and they'll give it to somebody else. So if you're not using your full power, that gives a chance for somebody else that would be in conflict with you for your radius to boost their power because you're not using that
or
space.
Or Clear Channel. Maybe not. We almost had, I know we had licensing issues over the damaged transmitter last year. There were issues getting the license renewed. So, yeah, we definitely need help.
They've actually got a whole description of this on the Indiegogo campaign.
Yeah.
Talking about the Byzantine, like, number of curves and craziness this has gone through.
Well, they're actually floating us the loan because they have to, like, they have to pre-build it in anticipation of getting the money. And there's a deposit put down on it or something like that. So it's important that we actually raise the money and get it delivered. That'd be nice.
It says that we're at, what, $12,531 of the $20,000.
Yeah, and that's really good. So go to kpft.org.
It's 12 days into 60. So that actually is not bad at all.
No, we're
but
rocking.
We still need help.
We definitely need help.
And the sooner it happens, the sooner they can put the new transmitter in and we can go to full power.
Fully armed and operational radio
fully
radio
operational
station.
Radio station. Behold my fully operational Pacifica radio station. Yes.
Well, the nice thing is, so this will pump us back up to 100,000 watts.
Maybe we can actually reach the listeners that have money to give during fundraisers.
That's what I'm saying. We get our signal out there and, you know, people outside watch us and hear us.
It's like, hey, man. Hey, audience, what you doing? Oh, nothing much. Just listening to KPFT in the suburbs.
Third time. Third time.
Pledge drive time. Pledge drive time. All right. So, second hour of Technology Bites. And let me go to Geek Radio. We got everything's out of whack.
Everything's broken.
I know.
Everything's terrible.
Everything's terrible. All right, so let's do this.
Bite of the apple time.
Here we go. We're doing it. Jay's doing it.
The happy bumper is what it's called.
I want the happy bumper.
I want the happy bumper.
It's so happy. Did you actually do the la 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 yourself? Is that actually you singing la 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 la, Pete?
No, that is literally from an MP3 of the Happy Tree Friends.
La 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 la. I remember that.
Directly from them, yeah. Yeah, they're on Netflix, and so I had watched a few episodes a few weeks before I redid it, and it's like, oh, what's happy? But kind of not, in a way, and it's like, that
happy
was perfect.
And frightening
so.
At the same time. What's happy at first, but frightening when you think about it?
Yeah, don't watch Happy Tree Friends with your children unless they're old enough and twisted enough for it. Watch it by yourself if you're an adult. Apple stuff. This one's interesting. You know, there were the rumors talking about an Apple car, an electric car project. It was codenamed Project Titan. Apparently, Apple was in talks with BMW to use the BMW i3 as the basis for their electric car. The company was interested in the body of the i3, which is a small hatchback that has a shell made of carbon fiber to keep the car light. The companies began talks in autumn 2014, but broke off before committing to check in with each other and their plans intermediately, or, you know, periodically. It doesn't sound like that's moved forward, but it's interesting that they actually have talked to somebody about an electric car and, you know, getting pieces of the technology. You know, basically approaching it like a computer company, car company, which is, oh, there's a carbon fiber shell here. Where's the batteries? You know, building it, sourcing it the way that we source computers. Thought that was interesting. Now basically rumors. One is if you were hoping for a 4-inch screen iPhone 6C in 2015, sounds like that got nixed. There actually was some noise in the supply chain that they might be doing it. The thing about it is apparently the iPhone 6 is still selling well enough that they don't think that it would be worth bothering to have a separate device. You know, the Arcuri had speculated that Apple may have delayed or dropped the plans to release the iPhone 6e due to concerns that the budget smartphone would cannibalize the iPhone 6, which has had record-breaking sales and would continue to be a hot product for Apple if it was given a price reduction alongside an iPhone 6s. Arcuri believed the iPhone 6c would essentially be the iPhone 6 shrunk down to the size of an iPhone 5s. And then for a lower price, but Ming-Chi Kuo from KGI Securities, the analyst who's in the middle of a lot of rumors about Apple, issued a note to investors in April that claimed that it was unlikely in 2015, and a few weeks later said Apple's instead likely to release a new 4-inch iPhone with Apple Pay compatibility in 2016. So they may do something different then, but right now apparently they're just making enough money with what they've got that they're not going to do it. The other stuff is Well, iPads are coming, you know, it's coming up on iPad season or new iPad season. And there's rumors, you know, the last iPad mini update was kind of lame. It was basically add the fingerprint recognition and not much else to the you know, the iPad mini 3. The iPad mini 4, though, is rumored to be a smaller version of the iPad Air 2 with an A9 processor. Let's see, it'll have basically the same features and specs as the iPad Air 2, including the 8-megapixel camera and the thin design and the same kind of display and coating to make to where it was made to be thinner. There may also be, the iPad Air 3 may be based on the A9 processor. There's dueling rumors on this. One rumor is that there won't be a new iPad Air in 2015, that the focus will be on an iPad Pro, a bigger iPad Pro, but that's still not clear. But so it does sound like an iPad Mini 4 might be in the offing, and with more power behind it and the better screen and so on, may make that compelling. At the very least, a new one pushes down the price of the old ones. So if you've been holding out for a deal on some of that, then you'll probably get your chance. And finally, we've talked about Skylake, the new processors, and wondered about when Apple might put them in their products and when there might be sufficient quantities. There's a rumor that those will get in the fourth quarter of 2015. There was a leaked article that hit prior to the Gamescom trade show in Germany. The processors are expected to offer a 10 to 20% performance boost. So that's not bad in single multi-thread applications with lower power consumption and 30% faster integrated graphics performance on average compared to Broadwell. The improved energy efficiency will also result in up to 30% longer battery life. So, for instance, on the MacBook, it would give about 17% faster CPU, up to 41% faster graphics, and about an hour, almost over an hour and a half in longer battery life. For the MacBook Air, a little bit faster on the CPU, 34% faster graphics, again, a little more than an hour and a half on battery life. The MacBook Pro, they think that the MacBook Pro wouldn't benefit as much, it sounds like. It's basically 11% faster CPU, 16% faster graphics. The iMac, which doesn't really get into power stuff, but the thermal part, you know, the temperature may let them do it thinner. Up to 11% faster and 28% faster on graphics. So it sounds like the big beneficiaries would be the MacBook Air and the MacBook itself. Getting the big benefits from it. Let's see, it's possible that, you know, they did do the MacBook Air and the 13-inch Retina MacBook Pro have the Broadwell processor, but it's sounding like essentially that Apple may skip the Broadwell in the 15-inch Retina MacBook Pro. So. Intel is currently rumored to be launching no less than 18 new processors for use in notebooks in the fourth quarter beginning in November. So that should mean that a lot of stuff will be that there may be a trickle in the fourth quarter, but that the first part of next year there's going to be a lot of new. And it doesn't matter what you're talking about, Apple or anybody else. When there's a ton of new processors coming out, there's going to be a lot of interesting new hardware coming out at the beginning of next year.
All right. So I was looking at our next segment, which is Try, Buy, or Fry, and also that your two of the stories were Windows 10 related. And Lee had suggested that we have a trip down Windows memory lane. So as we go into the Try, Buy, or Fry section, let me get this queued up here and we will...
In the world of technology, new things come out every day. Our judges will decide whether to try, buy, or fry.
So, yeah, the big news is...
Yeah, I thought you were going to play the Windows Tada.
Ta-da!
Or Start Me Up.
No, we didn't pay for Start Me Up.
We're a radio station. We can play it anyway.
What did Microsoft paid? I know we can Google it really quick there, but they paid some kind of ludicrous amount of money to license. Hey, there we go. To license.
Like $100 million or something.
I don't
right?
think it was that much, but it was like $30 million or something. Let me see.
$1 billion.
Yeah. Microsoft, Windows 95, Start Me Up. Licensing, because I remember, I mean, that was a whole big campaign they used it on.
So are they going to call it Windows 10? They should call it OS 10.
They did say that.
Windows X.
Microsoft,
Windows X.
Microsoft might actually be, this may be the last formal version of Windows that gets released, which really would make it just like Mac OS.
Oh, that's a...
I found a soundboard, so you got like, you know, like eight different sounds.
This is the history.
This makes me
of
happy and
this
sad.
This is all
the same
Windows
time to
startup and shut down. That was NT. That was Windows NT starting up and shutting down.
Some of these get funky, like some of the server ones, like I'd never heard before.
Windows NT server.
That's NT 3 server, right?
Yeah, NT workstation 3.5.1.
So far, they've all sounded about the same.
They're about to change. 95's about to happen.
Windows Chicago.
Sounds like we're still installing Windows 95.
Yeah.
18th reboot.
Sounds like Windows Groundhog Day. Kind of like your Windows 10 is going to be.
Something interesting will happen shortly.
Please reboot again.
Promise.
Chicago.
Video drivers.
Still
out of
date.
They don't
come on.
Startup sounds at the very end. Those are like
what
like
version are we on?
Thing.
Are they doing the minor builds?
We're in Chicago.
All the different
preliminary
Chicago
release of Chicago, Windows Chicago.
If they're all the same, can't they just skip them?
They're doing them all because they're committed to the.
It sounds like it's sped up a little bit.
It's getting faster.
Wait, here we go. Hang on.
Oh. That's 95.
Keep hanging on.
It's toying
Hopefully
with
it
us.
Doesn't hang.
Chinese beta one. Test
Always
release,
dangerous.
January 95.
This is pretty exhausting.
Oh, we're still in 95.
Wait, the splash screen just changed. No, wait, it's going to do it. It's going to do real.
What's it going to do?
Oh, that's April test release. We're almost there. Oh,
April of 95.
There
Yay!
There it is, the Brian Eno sound.
Is that a Brian Eno?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
And then it went back.
God, I remember that.
Brian Eno did the sound.
Is that XP?
That's
no, 95
still.
95, yeah.
That was such a peaceful boot up back then. Mm-hmm. They said, nope, can't have that.
It's 95.
Those are the shutdowns, Rev actually. So the Eno is the shutdown.
No, that's the startup. That's the startup sound. The is shutdown it? Is still the ta-da.
Yeah, because the little Windows flag would have little tinges of color running around the outside of the flags at this point. Can
not
you
until,
guys actually
not
see
until
it?
98.
Is that 90,
There's
until
NT.
98?
Yeah, this was the NT4 startup sound, which sounds awesome.
Yeah.
Powerful.
Get some stereo speakers around you. That was pretty cool back in the day.
And it shuts down.
Bring it back.
In reverse. It's backing it up.
NT workstation.
There's like 5 more minutes on this video.
We'll jump ahead here a little bit. Neptune.
Windows 2000 beta, yeah.
Whistler.
Windows 2000
okay.
pre-release.
A little more current.
Or no, Whistler was XP pre-release.
Yeah, Windows XP. Server 2003.
Yeah, this
that's the funky one that
ones,
Lee was probably
like,
mentioning.
You've never heard of before.
Longhorn. Home server.
Vista 7 and everything. Now, I haven't heard if 10 has new startup noises.
This was released in 2012, so it won't happen.
No,
yeah,
that won't happen.
Have Windows 8 on there.
Now, what does Linux sound like when it reboots?
Well,
I guess
if,
I don't have to worry about yeah.
Ubuntu's got some bongos.
If you've edited your xorg.conf file...
That was more of a joke. You really shouldn't be rebooting Linux. You don't have to reboot Linux.
If you've compiled the right sound card drivers... You will hear it cursing at you.
That's Windows 10.
Oh, all right. Well, that's kind of nice.
So anyway, Windows 10 is released
yeah,
today.
The shutdown sound you hear on Linux is, this thing's been up for 425 days, damn it.
You're ruining my uptime.
There will be no shutting down.
I was going to say the sound you hear is Richard Stallman going, GNU Linux! Yeah.
I was going to say the quiet sobs of some system administrator somewhere in a server room having to give up the year of
possible. All right, Windows 10 free upgrade became available yesterday.
Mm-hmm. Well, today. Late yesterday. Late. Today is if you are a current user of and you have a legal copy of Windows 7, 8, or 8.1.
Although Microsoft is kind of, I mean, they're not being...
Well, they're not being too strict about it.
Yeah.
Because they want their installed base on 10.
Yes.
Smartly. That's a good move. But yeah, if you check down in your, what is it called? The notification area. It's not the system tray, but the thing down by the clock.
Yeah, the notification.
The notification area.
If you misclick, it will try and install Windows 10 every single
time.
Well,
there will be a little...
It wants
a little,
to install Windows
There will
10.
Be a little Windows flag down there. And if you click on it, if you have an eligible copy, it'll pop up a window, and it will say basically, hey, you're eligible for Windows 10. Click on me, and you'll get it. And that Microsoft is sort of rolling the upgrade. So if you don't, if you're eligible for it and you signed up for it and you don't get it today, fear not. It'll be on the list. They just have a tremendous installed base they're pushing through. So it'll roll out.
IT departments everywhere who did not prepare by blocking these updates on their domain control machines will find their users contacting them in the morning.
It's entirely possible.
For help with their new Windows 10.
That's awesome.
Happy Thursday. Surprise.
And there's a couple
Especially
of my...
Since some reviews say that there's problems with things like it not being able to find apps after you do your certain apps after you do your update.
Yeah, there've been funky issues.
Citrix
One of my
stops working.
My Microsoft guy installed it, and he got like the greatest error ever. And several people have gotten this. You can see it on Twitter, but it's an install error, and it pops up a window, and the window title bar says something happened, and the text of the error is something happened. So, like somebody, like when they were going through like the error list, they forgot, or like that trapped something that just they never
that was
expected
like the catch
to actually
all.
Come up. Yeah, something happened.
The end of there's a from Gizmodo, and it's linked from geekradio.com. The PSA: Windows 10 isn't a risk-free upgrade. And the last sentence is that the guy says, "I think you will like Windows 10. I'm a big fan." Except for all these nagging little issues that make it feel like the world's most gigantic beta.
This is a big so day one.
Yeah. It sounds like the best advice is that if you're just regular user and you're not the kind of person who can support yourself on your machine, that you maybe should wait until they iron out some of the bugs and then update.
Not bad advice.
It's actually, you know, unfortunately, I think the way that it's being rolled out, it's kind of almost in the, it's an update. It's like a Windows update. So people are thinking like, well, I should install this because it's not technically, you know, it's not an upgrade in their mind. It's an update. And there's a kind of a distinction there, and people are going to go for it without really taking into consideration what they might be.
This kind of redefines how Windows is going to start rolling out software, too. I can't remember if it was Pete or if it was Lee that mentioned that this is going to be the first, you know, like, quote-unquote major release, like, you know, Windows 10 kind of versioning thing. So this one, you know, it's arguably, a lot of people have said this one's not quite ready. It's still kind of, you know, like, kind of beta version. But the idea behind this one, instead of doing, you know, very like, you know, we're doing a version a year, a version every year and a half, we're going to keep up with Apple, they're just going to do continuous development, you know, just all the entire time. So it'll always continue to improve. Instead of having like a patch Tuesday, you're probably going to see a trickle of, you know, updates coming in nightly. And it's going to get a little bit more Linux-y. Linux, like if you have a package manager where just things continue to evolve
and
you just
also,
don't have to do anything.
They're also kind of going to adopt, I was reading this today, they're going to adopt a page out of the macOS playbook, and instead of like they'll have roll-up updates available and they'll be sort of dynamically built roll-up updates, so you won't have to like, so last week I installed Windows 8.1 on a brand new computer in preparation for Windows 10, and it was like the same thing, like I installed Windows 8.1 and that didn't take that long. That was, you
it's
know,
come all the way up
thing.
Though because they put that mandate on quick on
right
8.1.
Well
That's
it comes
why.
Up and then immediately you start Windows update and there's like, you know, 140 updates to download, and you're like, okay, well, that, you know, I just installed it, that makes sense. You install them and then you reboot, and now there's 35 additional updates, and
Please
so you're like
again.
All right, so you install those and reboot, and then it's like, and now there's 74 new updates, and it's like, why can't you just do like every other operating system does and just do this all in one go? And they're going to start, because, man, I mean, it's not something that affects you if you're not setting up operating systems regularly, but the people that do it is just
Linux,
so painful.
Linux can swap out a kernel without having to miss a beat, you know, without having to stop services. Windows needs to get on that.
Yeah, I remember
page.
Doing that with like a VMs, like Windows VMs that I don't use very often.
Yep.
And so I started up and I start using it, and then it's like, oh, you've got some updates. And so
okay.
I'm like, all right, well, I'll get to the end of the day, so I'll go ahead and I'm going to shut it down. So I'll go ahead and install these updates. And it stalls, and it reboots, and it comes up, and it installs some updates. And it does that like three, four, five times.
It's maddening. It's like, why can't you just like do it all in one thing? Because I got to go home. I'm not going to sit here and watch this.
Well, that's what a lot of the Windows installations were like. Windows 95, I remember I had a couple of machines that if I didn't install the drivers in a certain order, certain things wouldn't play well with other things. You know?
Well, that was back in the dark
days. Yeah, I mean, if you want to talk about walking down memory lane, a lot of those memories aren't all that awesome. I mean, there was some wonderful like,
it was like four megs of memory.
Yeah, it was like nothing. You know, you had to like balance stuff around.
I remember being excited the first time I installed Windows 95, which was a big deal. I was working at Babbage's at the time, and the Microsoft rep had come by and demonstrated it for us like the week before, and we did the
whole... And it was Bill Gates, and he was 17 years old on a steamroller.
You know what? Yes, let's just
got out of jail.
That is
fresh. He was high. High on pot.
And but we did the midnight launch, and I took it home, and I installed my copy of it, and I was very gratified to see that I could click start, shut down, exit to DOS, and like punch right out into nice familiar old DOS.
Were there a lot of people coming into Babbage's for that? I think I went to Micro Center for the launch on that, and there was a big trailer.
For us,
Babbage is more of a game company to me.
No, I mean, it was general
software
company.
It is, but did you guys carry more games or more office productivity suites?
I would say that
box per box.
That box per box, there were more games than productivity apps there, and plus they sold console games and stuff too. Mm-hmm. But I mean, there was a not insubstantial productivity.
Oh, no, they did that, but I'm
and education and all that stuff. But yeah, I mean, more games than anything else, because that's what, you know, home users tend to buy that. And plus, this was back in the mid-90s, where if you really needed a copy of, you know, Microsoft Office 95 or whatever, you'd probably get not Newegg, but Egghead. You'd get your Egghead catalog and order it that way, and you'd probably get a discount on it.
Did you did y'all have a corner of the store that had like a curtained off area that, you know, you had to be 18 to go into so you could get, like, you know, Leisure Suit Larry or something?
No.
We sold those to whoever wanted to come by.
Yeah, I don't even care, man.
That was before ESRB.
I figured if they had money, it was good enough for me. No, Babbage's didn't carry any adults-only titles. Not that I can remember. And I would have remembered because I was a teenager at the time. That makes me uncomfortable, Jay.
Come to the guru.
But yeah, I mean, Windows 95, it's been so long, and I mean...
20 years?
It's been, gosh, yeah, it's been a long time, and it's difficult to remember, A, how big of a deal it was, and then B, how, by today's standards and what we're used to, just how kind of cruddy it was.
Well, it was kind of cruddy. It was night and day as far as coming off Windows 3.11. The interface was night and day. It changed everything.
Yes.
No more did I spend 4 or 5 minutes a day lining up windows and getting everything just tiled just right and moving around. I mean, it really did change everything.
No,
the start button has been around with
manager
us for 20 years. Yeah. Really, arguably, there was a little bit of volatility, you know, up until Windows 3.10. I don't think really anyone ran Windows 1.0 or 2.0 that I really know. I know a handful of people that might have. Windows 3 is when it really kind of blew up. And then really, once Windows 95 hit, we haven't seen a lot of major changes to the UI in 20 years. It's been kind of the same. We've got
a
button on the bottom
left.
Well, until 8.
Yeah.
Until the half adoption of
But
the,
I still put that
touch
back in. I still make it look like 95.
When they wanted to, like, screw up everything just like GNOME.
But then 8.1 kind of set a lot of that right again. You know?
Sort
of. 8.1 made it better, I guess.
10 is going to... 10 makes it better. I mean, the issue with using 8.1 that I found, not that I'm a regular Windows 8.1 user, but every time you smacked the start button or went to... Because I'm a big fan of starting programs by typing, like you hit the start button and start typing what you want to launch and then launch it rather than navigating through the menus. And in 8.1, as soon as you hit the Windows key or hit the start button, and you're in the desktop, the Metro interface slams over full screen, obscures everything that you were doing, and it's this huge, very, very overwhelming visual context switch. I just didn't like it. And 10 fixes that. 10, the start button is, the start menu is kind of back. It's basically the 8.1 start screen, but in a start menu shape. And you don't have to have this tremendous visual, like, slap as soon as you want to bring up the menu and search for something.
Of icons that are like, you know, the size of...
Yeah.
Yes.
And it's the default live tile, so it's like MSN updated news with weather from Seattle and like a whole bunch of stuff that nobody cares about. gotta wonder why, like, the traffic on MSN is only as high as it is because it's the default homepage for Internet Explorer everywhere.
That's horrible, but it's probably true.
I can't believe it wouldn't be.
Well, it sounds like the biggest feature of Windows 10 is, and I can't tell from this article, does it just update itself automatically?
I don't think there is a way to disable Windows updates. I think you can tell it, like, I want to, like, pick when to install it, but it's not like in the current versions when there's the option to be like, shut up and don't ever update and leave me alone. I don't think that's even an option anymore.
Now, I should know this. Are they selling 10 in stores? Like, can you walk in and buy a retail copy of 10, or is 10 just kind of digital download only?
I know it's up on MSDN now if you don't want to do the automated download, but I don't know how you'd get it otherwise. I don't know. I don't live in that world anymore.
I think the push, yeah, it seemed like the push, that there was one article I saw was showing the contrast, you know, there's no big launch party and big, you know, event. There was it's gotten less and less. Obviously, Windows 95, they paid the Stones for big money for Start Me Up and had a big rollout, and there was the one.
You're breaking up there, Pete.
The
hard really
new operating system.
Womp, womp, womp.
That sounded kind of weird. Pete.
Nice. But this one, there's no real big rollout, and apparently, like, Staples and some other stores are making a big deal from the concept of selling computers that already have Windows 10 on it.
They're going to be installing Windows 10 live.
I don't know
and
that there's
selling
boxes of software.
No, it's going to be different. It's the digital world now, and in a lot of ways, the interesting thing I think about it is that this is kind of the first operating system released by, what's the best way to put this, a more humble Microsoft. Like, this isn't the giant, like, world-crushing Microsoft of old with the design philosophies that led to XP and Windows Vista and Windows 7 and in some ways 8. This is, you know, this is like the first, this is a post-Ballmer world now, right? This is Satya Nadella's Microsoft. And it's a lot less arrogant. Not that you can lay
post-Jobs,
everything.
Too. Yeah, first big major too. Release, you know, after Jobs leaving, too. So it's kind of a bit of a vacuum as far
it
as...
It is. And, you know, Apple's market share as a function of computer ownership isn't gigantically tremendous. But they command far more than their market share would suggest. And I like that. Competition is always good, especially in the operating system space, because for decades it was, you know, it was Microsoft's game to lose. And they...
Good.
Lost it, yeah, pretty much. They arroganted themselves right out of a dominant position.
Oh, I don't know if I agree with that, Zune.
Well, they seem to be one thing. It seems like one of the key things. I part of it is because it does seem to be the right idea. The kind of continuous updating, so that they're not just waiting, you know, 60 days or 120 days for the next big patch day or whatever.
Yeah.
But some of it may also be that the biggest thing that held back their revenue in the past was old copies of Windows software.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, the people who – there are people who are still not off NT, you know, kind of, or XP, I mean, that, you know, that have hung on to that. 3.1 hung on for way too long.
Well, and in a lot of ways, Microsoft lived in the world of trying to extract revenue from operating system updates, and that hurt them. I mean, it gave them money, because every time someone bought an operating system update, you know, they got money for it. But people, what they found, didn't buy operating system updates.
It built a culture of frugality where especially a lot of the older users would be like, you know, okay, this is an upgrade. What I have now should work just fine. I don't buy a new car every 2 years. Why should I buy a new version of Windows every 2 years? And that's why you had those holdouts. I still see, every once in a while, I'll see an XP machine out there, I wouldn't expect to have an XP machine,
Absolutely.
But it's running.
Well, I mean, most people, when you buy the computer, if you buy a Windows computer, the license that you get with that computer is the version of the operating system that you'll stick with for the life of that hardware, especially if it's an OEM computer. If you're buying a Dell or an Acer or a HP or whatever, right? That's you get what it came with. And very few people who aren't of the, you know, the tech savvy set would go and buy an operating system update. And then you look at what Apple started doing, starting with, was Leopard the first, or Snow
Where
Leopard,
they
started
the price
giving it away?
Radically.
Oh, yeah, I guess they went from...
They dropped it, like, down to, like, you know, a $20 bill or so without talking specific prices. But,
that's
know.
Right, yeah. First they made it...
It was around $100. Yeah, it was, like, upwards of $100, and they made it right around $100, and then they brought it down to, like, $19.20,
and
now
then
it's...
They were, yeah, it's free. It's free, and Apple's operating system adoption numbers every time they drop an update is tremendous because it's, you know, it's an automated no-cost
process. It probably saves them a little bit of money. They're not supporting as much out in the back. And what they're doing is they're moving more Apple hardware. They're making, you know, that expensive upfront cost, you know, with getting the sexiness of the hardware. Mm-hmm. They're defraying that cost a little bit by making you not have to keep pouring money into, you know, updating your operating system.
No, and Microsoft has, I mean, you know, they're enormous and they, you know, they're a humongous multifaceted company, and the amount of money they bring in from their enterprise business and from their office licensing and now from their cloud licensing stuff far eclipses anything that they can get from charging a couple $100 for an operating system upgrade when that charge prevents people from
upgrading. Think they know that that is not a revenue stream that they're going to be able to count on in the future. They're moving away from it because they're going to have to do something. There may be a subscription. Maybe Pete has some insight onto this, but you know, they're going to have to, I would assume they're going to want to monetize Windows 10 at some point or Windows 11, but I'm not sure how they're going to do that unless they go to like an annual subscription or a monthly subscription or, you know, I don't know.
I think they do it with the supporting stuff, with the
licenses,
with the SkyDrive stuff and Office 365 or Office Online or whatever the heck it's
called. So the OS becomes just a free thing
that you put on your computer so that Microsoft can sell you
software.
That's
what Apple's doing.
Yeah.
Well, they would make money. They make money just like Apple. They make money off of it when they sell it, when there's a computer sold with it, because obviously they get their cut for that.
And after that, their operating system is their
Windows. They're not giving them free to Dell and to HP to sell Windows 10 computers, I'm sure.
But they make money off of the ecosystem that they're creating on the OS.
You got a Windows computer?
Right.
You're going to buy Windows Apple?
I think to have ad-free solitary, you have to pay $10.
Really? Hopefully that's a joke.
I think so.
That's got it.
Okay. No, I don't think that's not a joke.
No.
I think one thing, the change in how they're distributing it and going to sort of this, I guess, sort of single operating system that keeps getting updated fits in with, you know, if you think about it, it's not as noticeable because it doesn't happen that often, but people don't have to replace their hardware as often as they used to. It doesn't wear out. And as we go to solid-state drives, and all, I mean, I've got a MacBook Air that is from, I think, 2009 or something, or 2010, and I can't really find a reason to not keep using it because it meets all the needs that I have it for.
I think that happened to a lot of people about 5 years ago.
Yeah,
we've
got an abundance of computing power.
Everything kept doubling, and what you needed to do with a computer didn't keep doubling.
We've come a long way from the shovel your Packard Bell out the door every 2 years, like, cycle that I think the world was on starting in the mid-90s and going up until probably the mid-2000s. I mean, you can get, and you have been able to get for the past 5 or 6 years, just some really rocking hardware on any operating system that you want to buy from most of the OEMs now without having to spend a lot of money. Apple gets held up a lot as kind of a beacon of producing amazing hardware. But, I mean, honestly, Dell makes good stuff.
Well, obsolescence isn't setting in as quickly as it is either. I mean, you get a 386, you know, and you buy in it, you know, this megahertz, and, you know, 6 months later, it's like they've already doubled the speeds. And we're not seeing those doubling of speeds. Like, we're not going to have an 8 gigahertz processor out in 6 months.
Yeah.
You know, they're much more incremental now.
No, and even, and the stuff that you do buy, your 5-year-old quad core i7 is
still
ludicrously fast, honestly.
That's when they're pushing
the
4K video.
That's part of with the, you know, that in the tablet world, that's part of why it hasn't, you know, people don't throw their tablet out every other year to get another, you know, new latest and greatest one because it just works. It still keeps working. It's even less likely to break, I think, than your PC. And you know, the analysts hate it, but in the real world, at some, you know, it makes sense. It's better for the consumer.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you can be happy with just about any kind of tablet that you want to buy at this point. I mean, Apple owns the space, but most of the offerings are great. And, you know, Google's got its ecosystem you can plug into. Apple's got it. I mean, there's great stuff out there. It's a great time to be alive using computers, except for all the security issues that'll explode your system.
Except for the fact that everything's broken.
Everything's
really fun right now.
Everything's broken and hacked, but the hardware lasts a long time. Too bad you can't use it because Chinese hackers stole all your credit card information.
Just get a pie.
We'll be back. We'll be back with Lee Hutchison and It's a Wonderful Hack after these messages.
It's all Barrett, man. Barrett's the hack master.
I'm a good guy. I promote building.
The hackinator.
You are literally wearing a black hat right now.
aside from that. Yeah, okay. Let's table this until next week. We'll talk about it when I'm in the studio next week.
Yeah, with a white hat on. You have a white motorcycle on that gas, don't you?
Oh, that's too bad.
So you drove him to hacking.
Let's take that to the what is that? Oh, the parking lot, right?
Maybe
people say we're gonna
take it to the parking lot.
We're gonna parking
playground it. Noon.
Just take it to the fridge.
We're gonna parking lot
as
that.
They say in jazz music. No, that's bridge. Never
is that
mind.
What they say?
Take it
to the mattresses. Meet me in my hotel room later. I think
take it.
Means.
Take it to
no.
the limit.
No. Take it. Was that
take
a song?
Take it to the limit. Yeah. That's from Flicted's training montage in the backyard. When he's doing his kung fu kicks or boxing or whatever his training montage is for.
Well, beyond Windows 10, here's the other thing for try, buy, or fry. And the thing is, I don't think they have a distinctive enough intro, but I thought of another name for this segment could be the Snark Tank.
The Snark Tank?
I thought that's what this room tank. Was.
I like it.
But I can't find... Can't think of an intro that would be clear that was a knockoff of the Shark Tank, but so that's what I'm thinking about right now. But there's a new Star Wars movie coming out, and a lot of us are probably old enough to remember when that one came out, and you wore all kinds of stuff that had pictures of your favorite characters all over it, or your lunchbox, or your shirt, or whatever. Well, now if you want to kind of slip back into that. Quietly and calmly, Adidas has a Star Wars line now.
Really?
It's called it's MI, so I'm guessing me or my Star Wars shoe is customizable. You start with a base model Adidas casual sneaker, and then pick the patterns you want using Adidas's customizer web app. You can choose from different colors, lace charms, Star Wars fabric graphics, and metallic treatments to the toe shell and the leather stripes. The example, if you go to geekradio.com and you click the link on the Step Out in These Intergalactic Star Wars Sneakers, the guy did a camo Stormtrooper Superstar 80s Adidas shoe.
Wow.
So this way you can wait in line for the Star Wars reboot and have your cool-ass Star Wars shoes on at the same time. I think that would be at least try. I know I would at least look at the thing where you design your own.
Star Wars shoes? Come on, man. How could you not want that?
Lee's trying to find a store online now.
I need the Amazon buttons that you can press to order one product, and that could be the Star Wars shoe. Speaking of which, those actually came out. That Amazon one-click button thing that we were talking about.
Brought one
happened.
Didn't you have a Tide one, or you just had
just
something?
I talked about it.
Okay. I envisioned someone actually having
it. Yeah, they're $4. They charge you $4 to get one.
But think of the money you save.
Would you go through shoes that fast? Scuffed on, new pair.
No, I would
push
just,
the button.
If the shoes were that cool, just never have too many.
You're such a woman.
These shoes are so old right now. I actually buy the same.
Those shoes and Pete, two old things.
I buy the same
things.
Shoes every time. I get these Reeboks. I think they're Reeboks.
Okay.
Yeah, I get
they're
these
amazing,
every single time.
They're amazing Reeboks. Kardec. Lee's shoes. Peter Hughes. Things that are old.
Things that are old but still cool. You didn't meet the whole.
Yeah.
Things
preach
that are
it.
Worn but not worn out.
Preach it.
Not enough shoes.
So.
All right, Imelda Lee Marcos.
I don't buy that many shoes, and that's all the same ones over and over again.
Do you buy the same thing over and over
again? I do. I buy these black Reeboks. As soon as they wear out, I buy a new pair. I feel it makes me happy because I feel like I have the shoe question like answered for my life from now on. I've got a couple of pairs of nice shoes. I have black.
Until they stop making them.
No, don't say that.
He's stockpiled too many pairs.
Shut your mouth, Jay.
I assume.
That happened to me with one of my staple products.
I don't think I could deal with that. That would be too disruptive.
I'm completely on a tangent here, but I need to call out Betty Crocker now.
Call her out.
Call her out, that woman. So every Saturday, my wife and I go grocery shopping, and we get all of the supplies that we need to sustain our lives. And one of the things that we bought, because we would buy this They have a Fiber One blueberry muffin mix with 20% of your daily fiber per muffin. Make those muffins.
So they're like the blast-off muffins.
They're like,
they're like the Google Fiber.
So you would eat five of them, and you're good.
And you're good to go.
You would say
on a regular basis.
You would say I was a regular customer. We would buy this thing every week. My wife would make a batch of muffins, and there'd be a muffin in my lunch every day. So I have a muffin with my coffee in the morning. And, you know, everything was great.
This is part of your. This was like a settled part of your routine. Like,
this was like, I had that figured out. We had that figured out. And so we go to the store. We got, don't forget to get the muffin mix, throw it in the cart, move on.
Good to go.
Every day for, every Saturday for years and years and years. And then, so we go to the grocery store and they're gone. They're not there. There's not a space where they used to be. They're just gone.
So it's not like the truck didn't show up this week.
No, there's three different flavors. They had the blueberry, they had the cinnamon, and they had some banana nut.
Banana nut, yeah.
And they were just gone. We should have been kind of tipped off that something was up because they moved places to the upper shelf, and then they were gone. And I spent last weekend going all the grocery stores looking for them, trying to find them. You know, it became an obsession. It became a thing.
Did you turn to the internet?
I turned to the internet, and on Amazon, you can buy them 4-packs. When you buy these things, when we bought them, they were like less than, they got like $3 a box.
Right.
On Amazon, you can buy a pack of 4, and they're $8 a box.
That's terrible.
So, you know, God knows.
Can you, like, buy the mix in bulk somewhere? I've seen that. You can do that with cereal. You can buy Cinnamon Toast Crunch in, like, 80-ounce bulk packages.
No, we called Betty Crocker.
Called Betty.
We called them up, and the poor woman on customer service that day got an earful from my wife about, you know, they said they're discontinued. It's discontinued. It wasn't as successful as we hoped, she said in her best marketing ease.
Put Betty on the phone.
I need to talk to your superior.
To
is Betty there?
Is Crocker available?
Well, that's just a Crocker. So, yes. Yeah, so,
well,
can't you
get like the Parade brand knockoff muffins?
There's nothing in that high of fiber available anymore.
Can't you like add
you
like
just,
some Metamucil?
Yeah, I was going to say pour in some Metamucil into the mix.
I'm just saying you may want to hoard some shoes.
I guess so.
You might want to figure out how many of those pairs of shoes it will take you to get to your golden
years.
You're going to
give me, like, literally an anxiety attack.
I got to go buy shoes right now.
I'm just telling you that it could all go away.
Well, at some point, at some age, you have to flip from black Reeboks to white Reeboks because you got so old. So you only have to figure until you get to that age.
You could still keep the black socks.
I'm wearing white socks right now. So
I mean, we flip it. You hit 50, we flip.
Actually,
60,
those aren't
flip.
Even socks.
Yeah, no, they're socks.
Those come up to your ankles.
These are good socks. These are my hidden comfort.
It's tennis
socks.
Were they gray that way, or is that the shoes?
It's probably the shoes.
Lee Hutchins is wearing Geek Chic. It's a short, black shorts.
Yes.
Kind of baggy. Showing off his style. His legs get a lot of computer
monitor light. They do. A lot of computer
light.
Radiation.
Yes, you can
There's
tell.
A lot of pasty in here.
A little
I gotta
bit.
Say.
Little bit.
Yeah, we're a pale bunch.
So anyway, I'm just saying, you might want to stock up on some shoes.
I'm panicking now. Freaking out, man. I thought that I had that aspect of my life settled, and now the rug's just been pulled out under me.
I didn't
me,
want
I'm,
you to have that,
I'm
so
questioning,
I took it from you.
I'm questioning the permanence of all things, you know?
Everything is so transitory.
Why are we even doing this show anymore? We're just yelling out into the ether. Nothing is real. Well,
you've broken a man tonight, Jay.
It kind of fits into the weird science story about the Fermi paradox.
Oh, that kind of dovetails perfectly into it.
When this baby hits 88 miles per hour, you're going to see some serious science.
And no muffins.
This one, this does fit in with the whole sort of shoes thing. It may explain everything. You know, the Fermi paradox is, you know, one of the things is the NASA announcement from last week that was on the day after our show was that they had found the most Earth-like planet yet in the kind of Goldilocks habitable zone around its sun. It's older than our planet, so it's had more time to develop life. It's slightly larger than Earth, but it's a little bit farther away from its sun so that things kind of balanced out. And the thing, if you take that and you take sort of the number of planets and stuff like that that are out there, you know, just when you go out at night and look at the stars, you can see about 2,500 of them, which is like 1/100,000,000th of the stars that are in just our galaxy, let alone the number in the universe, which I'm not going to go to. But, you know, you think, though, that it, with all this time that there'd be that we'd have found some other evidence of some other civilization. And the Fermi paradox is what happened? What's the deal? Why would it happen? And the theory is that there's one of the theories is that there's the great filter. You know, there's different types of species. Hopefully, is the sound thing working okay, or am I?
We can hear you.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, basically, that you know, there's a thing called the Kardashev schedule, the scale, which is how you kind of rank where civilizations are in their lifespan. A type one civilization has the ability to use all the energy on their planet, which is where we're almost there. We're probably a type 0.7 civilization on that scale. Type two civilization can harness all of the energy of their host star. Our feeble type one brains can hardly imagine how someone would do it, but you know, if you imagine something like a Dyson sphere, and that doesn't come from the vacuum cleaner dude. It's a much bigger thing. Basically, a sphere that totally encloses the star and absorbs all of the energy that comes from that star. A type 3 civilization is a civilization accessing power comparable to that of the entire Milky Way galaxy. And so the question is, how come we aren't seeing a type 3 civilization we should be able to see? You know, that would be easier to detect if they're using the power of an entire galaxy. That should be on a scale where we could potentially detect it. One of the theories is that there is some deal in the course of evolution called the Great Filter that basically no species or only very, very, very tiny few can possibly make it past the Great Filter to become a stage 3 or a type 3 civilization. So it's kind of, you know, the big question, though, is where in the time, if it's true, if that's really why we're not finding, you know, basically it's sort of the wall, you know, is that the wall that nobody can get to? Let's see. So if, you know, obviously looking at humanity, figuring out where the great filter occurs is kind of important, right? Because if it's soon, if we've already passed the great filter, then, you know, it's, you know, onward and upward, and we've made it past whatever the big problem is. If we're so super special, you know, that basically the great filter is that it's very difficult or unusual for life to begin at all. The sadder concept is, and then there's the one where we're the first, that we're just the earliest, one of the earliest civilizations to get to where we are in the whole universe, which kind of seems unlikely. The final version is we're effed, and you can fill in whatever F word you like for there, which is that the great filter is somewhere in our future, and that that most civilizations don't get past it, and we may not either. that type 2 and type 3, you know, that it may happen somewhere even before you can become like a type 2 civilization, and so we're just... we're screwed. So I don't know which one of those sounds the most plausible, but if we don't have the right shoes, I think Lee would agree that maybe that's the great filter, is when you just can't get the right kind of shoes anymore and life loses all meaning.
All civilization ends. We wander shoeless, staring off into the distance.
We've gone down the path of Air Jordans instead of Air Einsteins. We've chosen poorly.
The other quickie thing from Weird Science is apparently they're working that there's a, and you may want to read the article because there's a lot more in it than we're going to be able to talk about, but apparently NASA is working on the Mars spacesuit, and they're working on them being much more customized because of, you know, if you're going to go to Mars, you're not going to be there just for, you're not, it's not like going to the moon where you're there for part of a day. It's go, you know, for some number of hours, you're going to go to the, to Mars for the long haul. And so they have a, IO9 had a great interview with, Amy Ross, who's been designing and building new spacesuits for NASA since the 90s, and getting her input on concepts on suits. They're working on the Z2 spacesuit right now, and they're getting ready to test them in the vacuum chamber. Apparently, it's a planetary surface walking suit. So it's got shoes. See, it ties into the whole leaf.
That makes it even tougher doing any kind of design work like that. You don't really know what's going to be in style next season, much less, you know, 40 seasons from now. So that's a big commitment, you know, on the fashion.
Let alone in the thermal environment that it's going to be used.
There's that, too.
So, read up on it. It's pretty cool, and they have an image with a timeline of spacesuits. And the thing that's kind of odd is they don't really change all that much, of course, across the course of them. I would say that, like, sci-fi robots on television have changed more from, you know, the first spacesuits time to now than, say, spacesuits have.
It's complicated. Spacesuit design is one of those kind of weird things. It's continually evolving, but a spacesuit is effectively a little spaceship. It's a self-contained little world that has to have everything in it that the astronaut needs to survive. It's got layers and everything, and there's two different schools of how to construct them. Do you go a hard suit or a soft suit? And each has its advantages. It's difficult because a lot of the Mars suits they're thinking about doing are sort of skin tight and soft rather than being.
That's right.
Yeah. So fortunately, we only select astronauts that are aesthetically pleasing.
Tell me more and describe it slowly.
Time, do it with 7 of 9.
They cling lovingly to your
necessary bits,
to your pudgy basement dwelling self.
They're no Tron Man suit.
Tron Man, in a lot of ways, already has a spacesuit that resembles some of the future concepts
ahead
that
of the
NASA's
curve.
Looking at. He does
many curves, and he's ahead of most of them.
He's got a lot of. Did we have to? Did we have to go there?
We didn't have to.
But we did!
Our bold mission.
To boldly go. Ooh.
Wow, everybody's packing up already, so it looks like it's getting ready to be that time.
There it is. There's that time.
Great show. Thanks for tuning in, everyone, to another episode of Technology Bites. I want to remind you that the Geek Gathering is off for next Friday. Go to the website. We've got information about the special, extra special post-DEFCON Geek Gathering.
DEFCON
happening.
Redux.
Party town!
We'll be losing a couple of the hosts early next week as they head off to Black Hat and stuff. But
they'll be back.
So we're going to have a very special Barrett time next week.
We will. I'll bring back lots of stuff. And yeah, there'll be a Barrett time.
We're talking about when you're gone.
There'll be a Barrett
time. We're talking about next Wednesday.
Next Wednesday when you're gone.
I mean, there may actually be a Barrett time next Wednesday.
Barrett time.
Remember that gonna time. Gonna phone it in.
No, it'll be more RSA about keys. Remember that time Barrett did at DEF CON, whatever he did, that stuff. Yeah.
Oh, maybe we won't call him. Radio silence. See you in 2 weeks.
Four loco Barrett time.
Crunch. And his boys choir. All right, we're gonna get out of here. Thanks for tuning in, everyone. I'm Jay Lee.
I'm Peter Hughes.
I'm Flicted.
I'm Barrett.
I'm Lee.
KPFT has launched a crowdfunding campaign to cover the costs of a new transmitter, and we could use your help. KPFT has been operating at reduced power, but your donation today will help us pay the balance on a 100,000-watt brand new solid-state transmitter. That new equipment will give KPFT a boosted signal, meaning you and the rest of the Upper Texas Gulf Coast community get a station that can be heard better, farther than ever before. In just a matter of days, we've moved close to our goal.
but your contribution of $5, $40, or more could help us pay off the significant debt we've incurred to give you better radio. Donate $100 or more, you'll get a limited edition t-shirt exclusive to this Indiegogo campaign. Help provide great music, news, arts, and more to the biggest audience possible. Visit us online for the crowdfunding campaign link. It's at kpft.org and on Facebook and Twitter at KPFT Houston. Thank you.
KPFT has a fun drive coming up, and we need your help to make it a success. Our phone volunteer trainings are coming up, and we could really use your help. You'll meet KPFT listeners just like you and help this community radio station. Your efforts make a difference and can make this a fun, fast, and successful drive. We hold phone volunteer training regularly to accommodate all kinds of schedules. Visit kpft.org for a complete list of training dates. If you are a seasoned phone volunteer, call 713-526-4000 to sign up for a volunteer shift. You're tuned into Pacifica Radio, kpft.org, twitter.com/kpft, facebook.com/kpft Houston.